Hey, sex fans, welcome back. Today is Monday, March 22nd, 2010, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge.
My name is Addison DeWitt. I am a critic and commentator.
Nice to meet you, Addison. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick. I'm happily closing in on my annual spring break, at which time I will take a well-deserved week off. Glory hallelujah. I gotta tell you, I've been going at such a breakneck speed since the new year that the hiatus can't come a moment too soon. I need a freaking break already.
I'm sure you must have things to do in the bathroom.
Actually, I do, but I'm going to have to hold it until after the show. But before we get to our respite, it's full steam ahead. We continue with the Erotic Mind podcast series today with an outstanding guest. He lives here in Seattle, so he moseyed on over to mi casa for a little tete-a-tete. How's that for mixing cultural illusions? I have the distinct pleasure of welcoming a true master of the erotic horror novel, the one and only Rick R. Reed. I know, if you know anything about contemporary thrillers and speculative fiction, well, then you'll know that his name stands out as a beacon for excellence in the genre. In fact, he's been called the Stephen King of gay horror. I know, no faint praise that, I can tell you. And I'm delighted to report that Rick is not nearly as scary as his novels. He's a sweetheart and charming as all get out. And as a special treat, Rick will share with us a mouth-watering selection of the fruit of his erotic mind. It'll make your naughty bits all tingly, I promise.
Would you really? How sweet.
For all things Rick R. Reed related, visit his website, rickrreed.com, and he's on Facebook too, don't you know? Facebook.com/RickRReed. Today's program is once again brought to you by Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. You know, even though I get tons of email from folks looking for my advice, I can only respond to a limited number of inquiries at any given time. But that doesn't mean that I don't care about everyone who writes in. I do. That's why I've set up the How-To Video Library. You'll find a link to this great resource right there on the front page of drdicksexadvice.com. Look for the Video on Demand tab. The video library is the go-to place for all of you who have sexual performance questions. You'll be able to watch all kinds of deliciously entertaining, delightfully enriching, and oh-so-informative videos right from the comfort of your own home. How sweet is that? Okay, on with the show. Welcome, Rick, and thank you for joining us. I know that it's been a long time in coming, but finally, you're here. And we've all been patiently waiting for a peek into your big, fat, uncut, erotic mind. Would you like to say hello to the nice people in the audience?
Hello, nice people in the audience.
So I've been spending a great deal of time on your website, as you know, and it's cleverly named rickrreed.com.
No, it's Rick R. Reed.
Oh, Rick R. Reed. See? Good for you. Thank you very much.
That middle R
is really important, because otherwise we would get to a web page that has absolutely nothing to do with you, probably.
Perhaps for a Pittsburgh Pirate.
Get out, really?
Yes.
Oh, you know that already. How interesting. So, folks, if you'd rather talk about baseball instead of erotica,
go to rickrreed.com.
Forget the R. So what first struck me, right after your handsome mug, was that what other people have said about your work. Here's one group of comments. You have been described as the Stephen King of gay horror. Your dark, suspenseful fiction has been called a harrowing ride through cutting-edge psychological horror. You have said that you have a knack for presenting the gruesome lower depths of the soul. Finally, Dark Scribe magazine said, Reed is an established brand, perhaps the most reliable contemporary author for thrillers
that crossover between gay fiction, the gay fiction market, and speculative fiction. That's pretty tall praise. How do you stand yourself?
Most of the time I can't.
Yeah, but others people can, a lot.
So that's probably why I'm always escaping into stories and characters that have nothing to do with the real Rick Reed.
I see. The real Rick R.
RealRickRReed.com.
Don't you know? I see. So, being a master of this genre, do you ever find yourself wondering how in the world will I top that in my next book?
Not really, because I was thinking of this question. I've had this question before, and it's, I guess I would, you could compare books to children.
Right.
So they're all different, so it's not really a comparative thing. So I'm not, each book is a new journey.
I'm
not thinking about how can I top what I did
time
out.
That's cool. I think I would have anxiety about that. I mean, if I got really high praise for doing something, I would think that, oh my goodness, what if I don't achieve that same level the next time? But if you're able to avoid that, that's a good thing.
Well, I think it's probably because, I hope this doesn't sound selfish, but the main person I'm writing for is me.
Uh-huh.
So...
curiously enough, one of the universals of talking to other authors, and in fact, other people, all the artists in this series, both visual artists and authors, and they say that they create their art for themselves.
Yeah.
And if anybody else likes it, it's gravy.
So that's kind of how I feel. So it's not. I'm not setting myself up to follow my last act.
Right.
I'm starting out on a new trip with a new set of characters, and if they're entertaining me or moving me, then it's all good.
Yeah. How long does it take for you to produce a novel?
Roughly a full-length novel, probably 3 or 4 months.
Yikes.
I write pretty... I'm pretty disciplined and write every day, and and I organize and kind of map things out in my head.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a outliner or anything. I don't plan my stuff out. Mm-hmm. So,
do you write from like page one through page 99 or whatever?
Yes. I can't imagine doing it any other way.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't know. I've never asked that question to anybody else, but that seems like a really interesting question. I've always wanted to know the answer. So other comments include, your most recent novels include Mute Witness, the harrowing tale of a young boy's abduction and how a small town's mind turned to the boy's gay father as the culprit. Bashed, about a horrific tale, hate crime and its aftermath. Dead End Street, a young adult's horror novel. Orientation, an epi?
Mm-hmm.
Award-winning novel about lost love, reincarnation, and sexual orientation. A sexy thriller called High Risk, about a bored housewife who chooses a very handsome and very psychotic stranger to come on to. Deadly Vision, a paranormal page-turner about a psychic reluctantly caught up in the murders of two teenage girls in her small western Pennsylvania town. Blood, a tragic vampire love story. And I Am, a thriller about a serial killer preying on gay men using online gay hookup sites.
And it's actually In the Blood.
In the Blood. Really? There you go. So I'll have to make a note of that. And how did you discover that you have a knack for writing this sort of thing?
I always get the question, when did you start writing? And I usually say when I was about 6 years old, because that's
I'm going to ask that question later.
That's when I could. That's when I could write.
Uh-huh.
So, and I was writing stories from that age.
Wow.
And it's something that's been almost constitutional with me.
Yeah.
So
that's again one of the universals from this series. Just about every artist I've talked to, both literary and visual, all say they started out very early as children
mm-hmm.
in their chosen thing, in their chosen field, and that I suppose makes a great deal of sense.
So there was no moment of discovery
for me, or
I decided I wanted to be a writer like someone decides they want to be an attorney or an accountant.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like being gay. I never had a choice.
Yeah, but you're writing a particular genre, at least the stuff that we identified here. And so when did you find that you had a knack for doing that as opposed to writing travel stories or, you know, about doggies and duckies? And
I guess that, you know,
at
comes
the same
from
time?
Childhood, too,
no kidding.
Because I've just always been fascinated by the dark side of things and things that go bump in the night.
Mm.
And, you know, I would stay up late on Saturday nights and watch Chiller Theater out of Pittsburgh from, started at like 11:30 and they
had a double feature
of two cheesy horror movies.
Uh-huh.
And my parents allowed me to do that. And later I watched Dark Shadows, like I was slavishly devoted to that. I've always been sort of fascinated by the darker side of things.
So some people might suggest that a guy's got to be pretty twisted inside to write this genre. Is there any truth to that? I mean, you seemed downright normal when we had lunch together a couple weeks ago. Did I miss something?
No, you didn't miss anything. I'm actually, I think I get this question a lot, especially if someone gets to know me a little in person and then they read something and they're like, oh my God, you know, there's a big difference between what comes out on the page and who I am in person.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I don't know that I have an explanation for it. What I say is that maybe that kind of dark, twisted stuff comes out in my writing, and that's my outlet for it.
Right.
And maybe if I didn't write, maybe I would be a serial killer or something
like that.
Yeah. And the other possibility is I had, growing up, I had numerous head injuries.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I was hit by a car. I had my head split open a couple times. I had stitches many times. If I shaved my head, I'd probably have scars all over. I never broke a bone or anything, but every time I got hurt as a child, it was my head.
No kidding.
So maybe there's something to that. Might explain a lot.
I love it. That is amazing. That is absolutely amazing. So besides your novels, your short fiction has appeared in more than 20 anthologies, and you are a member of the Authors Guild, the Horror Writers Association, and the International Order of Horror Professionals. My goodness, sir, when do you find time to touch yourself impurely?
Well, my feeling is that we do what we want to do. And we make time in our lives for what's a priority. So.
Right. So when you take a break from your writing schedule, you can use yourself, so to speak, as it were.
Use my body like an amusement park.
I love it. So how many publications, hard copy and web-based, do you have out there? Do you even know?
Next month will be my 12th and 13th book coming out.
Uh-huh.
The Blue
That's
Moon.
Those
are full
standalone
novels,
right?
Blue Moon Cafe and Tales from the Sexual Underground.
Uh-huh.
And then I just signed the contract for the 14th, which will be out next summer. That's called A Demon Inside, which is a gay haunted house story.
Wow.
So if you add those all together, that's 14. And then I have several like novellas and shorter works that are published in ebook form,
right.
Which is, that I'm not really sure of, but I would say at least a dozen.
Mm-hmm. I hate it when they don't know how many books they've written and how much they're published. I hate that. Oh, I'm a frustrated author. I think I mentioned that to you when we had lunch together, but anyhow, let's not go there. Let's talk about happy things. Let's talk about you. So listen, I want to make sure that you know that you're welcome to burst into reading examples of your work at any moment, because talking about the erotic mind is swell and all, but savoring the fruit of that mind's labor is even better.
Okay.
Totally.
I'm all set.
Okay.
So can I just go ahead?
Yeah, do. Okay. I love that. Thank you.
This is a little piece from a book that's coming out next month, which is Tales from the Sexual Underground, subtitles Fact, Fiction, and Stranger Than Fiction, which is a collection of erotic short stories, essays, and kind of just feeling pieces about sex.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived in Chicago for a long time and spent a lot of time on the L train. So this little piece is called Redlining, and I just thought I would read it because I think that our most sensitive sex organ is not between our legs, but between our ears.
Ah, good for you. Thank you.
This is Redlining. The writer sits alone on the train, thinking how the stops between North and Clybourne and Fullerton will bring him from darkness into light, a metaphor for heaven. There's a book open on his lap, something by Henry James or James Joyce, who knows. The obtuse words and their connections evoke little response when his blood flow is heading southward. Sometimes he thinks about a quote applied to Errol Flynn and how God gave him a brain and a penis and only enough blood to run them one at a time. You get the picture. He's sitting in the last car of the northbound train because there's always been this vague rumor that the last car is the one to board if you're gay and want to cruise. He's never seen much evidence of this, but that doesn't mean it isn't worth giving it a whirl. And then the book below him blurs even more as the artist boards the train and sits across from him. How does he know he's an artist? Even though the evidence is circumstantial, it's pretty convincing. He carries a battered black leather portfolio. His faded jeans are spattered fetchingly with paint in various hues. The other accoutrements, shaved head, oval rimless glasses, and an expression of being elsewhere also contribute to this portrait of the artist as a young man. Wouldn't it be lovely to think that maybe he has boarded this last car for the same reasons as the writer? And then their eyes meet and all doubt is erased. Gay men, like straight ones, may have scores of lines designed to charm and seduce, but nothing beats the language of the eyes for communicating desire. Forget the smile. There is something in this liquid connection that transcends gestures as pedestrian as words and body language. The eyes have it. The artists are pale blue behind the glass, and his stare, held for a few seconds longer than what's appropriate for a stranger's glance, says everything the writer needs to know. When the train reaches Belmont, the artist gives one more meaningful glance, and the writer rises to follow, clutching his James Joyce in front of his loose-fitting jeans. There is a moment when the writer wonders if he is doing the right thing, but when they get off the train, his doubts vanish like an ethereal wisp of smoke. A smile confirms what he's known all along, and the artist's question of having the time to stop by seals the deal. They walk to the artist's apartment, a studio above a store on Clark Street. They're naked in an instant, clothes falling to the floor in a frenzy. Bodies mesh, lips connect. It's an old story, and hungry as you are for it, dear reader, the writer leaves the rest to your imagination. Think sinew, skin, muscle, and bone connecting, orifices explored, juices released. As the writer says, it's an old story. You, dear reader, may wonder what his name was. How the hell should the writer know? That would spoil the reality of the writer's fantasy.
Ha! I love it. I love it. So are they all kind of like small little vignettes like that, or is that just a piece of one?
Tales from the Sexual Underground, the title actually comes from a column I used to do when I lived in Chicago. Every week I wrote a 500-word piece for this magazine called Night Spots, which was a weekly adjunct to Windy City Times. And so a lot of the pieces in it are short like that, and but I also intersperse those with several erotic short stories.
Mm.
Most of them have been published in different anthologies and things like that. So it's varying lengths.
I got it.
It's not all the same.
Good. So before we get to discussing erotic art or erotica in general, and your work in particular, let's talk about you. Is Rick Reed, Rick R. Reed, your real name or a nom de plume?
It's my real name, believe it or not. people think it sounds so zippy, but no, it's my real name, and I used to be ashamed of this fact. My name is not Richard. The name on my birth certificate is Ricky.
Really?
And the R stands for Ray. So my name is Ricky Ray Reed.
Really?
So I'm letting the world know that. I just told that to someone recently, and they said, Southern born? And that wasn't it. It's more, I think, the era I was born in, and it was Lucy and Ricky were very popular, and
yes,
Lucy
right.
was giving birth to Ricky
right.
about
oh,
the
no
same
kidding.
Time.
Right.
So I know someone in Chicago whose name is Rick, and his legal name is also Ricky, and we're about the same age.
No kidding. That's very interesting. So you never had pause about writing under your real name?
There have been a couple times when I've thought about using a pen name. Deadly Vision and the vampire book you mentioned, In the Blood, are both strong lesbian stories.
Mm-hmm.
And the publisher who published those initially said, do you want to use a pen name? Because, some lesbians might not want to buy a book by a male person.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought about it briefly, but then I just decided it would get too complicated to try to, if I have to promote myself, what if I do a book signing or something? Mm-hmm. Do I have to line up some woman to be this,
right.
And I have enough things to keep straight, if you pardon the
expression. One of the things that I do know, and I've heard this from several other of the authors, both women and men, who say that when they're writing a different genre, like lesbian literature if they're a man, or gay literature if they're a woman, they tend to use a different...
It helps them get in the mindset for...
And also publishers won't accept, like I've heard this from several women, will not accept gay fiction from an identifiable female name, like Susie. But if it's, S.D., Wagner, then it works.
Interestingly enough, what I've heard the opposite, too.
Is that right?
Because gay male fiction, I think we're going to talk about this later, is read widely by women.
I know.
It's a big female audience.
Know.
And I know of one male author who was asked by a publishing house to use a female name.
No kidding.
To write gay male fiction. So,
That is so interesting. That is so interesting. So give us a little bio then. Where were you born? You said, was it Philadelphia? Or Pittsburgh, did you say?
About 45 minutes west of Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh. Great.
In this Ohio River town called East Liverpool, which is a pottery town of about, there's probably about 12,000 people there now. At one time, it was a big center for pottery, and there's still some potteries there that people, if you collect Fiesta ware, would know about that. I grew up in that town. Most of my family still lives there, and went to college at Miami University in Ohio, the first Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And after graduation, I moved to Chicago and lived in Chicago most of my adult life. I've had two brief stints living in Florida, once in Tampa for a couple years, and once in Miami for a year and a half, which was right before I moved to Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
And came to Seattle because of my partner's job. He's a buyer for Nordstrom, and so he ended up getting moved here, as he calls it, to come to the mothership.
Mm-hmm.
And
do you like it?
Yes, I do like Seattle a lot.
I grew up in Chicago, and at the northwest suburbs, anyhow, and I thought it was a great place to grow up. I would never want to go back. I just couldn't bear the weather. The weather is so cuckoo. But Chicago's a great town.
You sound like my partner. I mean, I love Seattle, and it's becoming more and more home to me every day, but I really, really love Chicago, and I would move back in mm-hmm. an instant. But my partner says the same thing mm-hmm. you do. He says, I couldn't bear going through one of those winters again. Uh-huh. Even though he grew up in Minnesota, which you'd think he'd be used to it. But
it's exactly that. So we talked already about your start as a writer. You started writing as a child. When did you start introducing an erotic component to your writing?
Well, I guess there's always been an erotic component mm-hmm. to everything. The first book I had published back in 1991, which was a very mass market horror novel published by Dell called Obsessed, and it was about a man who was a serial killer in Chicago who was killing women, believing he was a vampire and draining their blood, but he really believed he was a vampire. But he also got sexually stimulated and mm-hmm. satisfied by the act of killing
right.
and drinking blood.
Uh-huh.
So I guess it's always been there. And then the next book I wrote, which Dell also published, was Penance, which was about street kids in Uptown Chicago, which when I wrote that back in the early 90s, Uptown was a very seedy area. It's been gentrified since then. But, you know, they were selling themselves on the street.
Right.
And the dichotomy in that book was that they were being kidnapped one by one by this pedophile who hated himself,
right.
and as his expression of his self-loathing, he was imprisoning them in his basement on the West Side.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Gacy.
Kind of like John Wayne Gacy, but he thought by getting rid of them, he could get rid of this component of himself
right.
that he hated,
right.
and then the hero of the book is a priest who also struggled with the same kind of impulses.
Interesting.
And then, I'm not going to go through the whole list, but then I wrote A Face Without a Heart, which was a modern-day version of The Picture of Dorian Gray,
right.
and that was part of the reason I wanted to write that was that I thought I could be much more graphic and bring the homoerotic subtext mm-hmm. of the original book much more to the forefront.
Ah, interesting.
And so... I don't know that there was ever a turn
right.
toward an erotic direction. It's always been a component of things I write.
Right. Is there a really strong component? I'm getting the sense of this. I haven't read a great deal of your stuff, but I get a sense that there is this a component about coming out or dealing with one's sexuality. I think the component
that's probably a common theme is obsession.
Right. Oh, interesting.
Sexual obsession, and I think that runs through almost everything I write.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times, even the gruesome stuff is a twisted.
Right.
It has its roots in a twisted sexual identification
right.
or
right.
Longing.
Huh. Interesting. That is fascinating. So. As you know, my primary reason for doing this series of interviews is to uncover something of the creative process. Are you living the life of a full-time sexual athlete? And if not, what sparks the images that become your erotica?
See, questions like that are kind of hard to answer. And I'm not going to even go to the sexual athlete.
Oh, no!
I
generally trip folks up with that one.
But, you know, it's really hard. It's kind of like the question, where do you get your ideas?
Right, right.
And it's really hard to say because they come from all over the place.
Right.
And, I mean, I suppose everything comes from my subconscious.
Right.
But, I mean, things as simple as just seeing an image on the street of lights reflected on a wet pavement,
mm-hmm.
which was actually the inspiration for my first book. And I was driving on the Eisenhower Expressway in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
and I saw that and thought of that, and I just suddenly had this image of this man driving home to his wife after killing someone.
Mm.
And then things come from dreams, and so it's... I really, you know, I don't know where everything comes from,
right.
but I'm just glad it keeps coming faster than I can possibly keep up with.
That's again, so wonderful. What a gift. Did you see it as a gift, I assume, yes? It's not like something like you're
yes,
burdened with, right?
I would say I'd see it as a gift.
Right. It's good. Because I would suspect that there might be some people who just would say, you know, this is too much. I don't want to go there again, or this is troubling, or you know, maybe I have too active an imagination, and you know, so
well,
I don't know.
The only time I've ever thought of it as a curse as opposed to a gift is, and I don't ever think this way for very long, but it's like, when sometimes a creative life can be a difficult life.
Yes.
A lot of people think there's all this money and fame, but the money and fame that people see is the very tiny, mm-hmm. tiniest tip of the mm-hmm. iceberg of mm-hmm. most people that are even professionals
right.
in a creative field. The money is terrible
mm-hmm.
for most of us,
mm-hmm.
and you know, the fame is hard won and
fleeting,
and yeah, and if you don't keep promoting yourself
right.
like this, you're, you know, there's
mm-hmm.
100 people in line behind you,
mm-hmm.
you know, waving their arms and saying, look at me. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, so I suppose if I've ever looked at it as cursed, you kind of think, well, wouldn't it be nice if I was just an accountant
mm-hmm.
and could have like, but I don't feel I can
mm-hmm.
because I,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just not how I'm made, and
mm-hmm.
and I what would I do with all these impulses and stories
mm-hmm.
and characters that come
right.
to me all
right.
the time?
Right.
So
yours is not merely an avocation; it's a vocation.
Yes, it's both.
Oh, interesting.
It's it's more a way of life than a way of making a living.
Yeah, right. Interesting. I'm just looking at my watch and I noticed that our time is up for today, and I'm not nearly halfway done with plumbing the depths.
Probing me.
Probing. I need to probe some more. But our time is up. I know. So I'm going to have to ask you to come back next week, will you?
I guess I could be persuaded.
What, we promise you cookies or something?
Just let's turn the microphone off and we'll negotiate.
All right. And you'll have to promise to read for us again next week.
I'd be delighted.
Okay. But before we go today, I want you to give us your website address again and walk us around a bit so we can visit you in cyberspace in the meantime.
Well, as we said at the top of the hour, it's www.rickrreed.com. And there's a blog, there's new releases, I have my whole bibliography is on there,
okay.
You can find everything. You can order autographed copies from there, which is about the only place you could get autographed copies
right.
from me, unless you can run into me in person. What else is on there? There's an FAQ section, and lots of pictures.
Yay! We love pictures.
And
well,
excerpts.
Sir. Oh, good, good, good.
Yeah, plenty
yes,
of
exactly.
excerpts.
Exactly, that's
and,
where I started reading your
book
stuff
book trailers and
right.
reviews
right.
and interviews.
Right. Well, sir, with that then, we bid you farewell for this week, and we look forward to seeing you again next.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Great show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. Tune in next week for part two of my conversation with Rick R. Reed. And more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is Dr. Dick's How-To Video Library. Listen up, buckaroos. Thanks to this amazing technology, you'll be able to watch your choice of smut from the comfort of your own home. With just a little prompting from you, they're going to come gushing out of your computer like nobody's business. Check it out. You'll find a link to this fabulous sex resource right there on the front page of DrDickSexAdvice.com. Look for the tab that reads Video on Demand. There is no membership fee. This is a pay-per-minute sort of deal. Remember, that your pay-per-view minutes allow you to watch whatever content you want for whatever length of time you choose. Pretty gall darn sweet, huh?
It's just that you get me so mad sometimes.
Hey, what did I do? One last thought. I hope you are also following my two other interview series, which appear on Wednesdays. One is called Sex Education, where I converse with prominent practitioners, educators, and advocates of unconventional sexual expressions and lifestyles. And we also investigate the world of fetish sex and kink. The other is called Sex Wisdom. Here, I chat with researchers, educators, clinicians, pundits, and philosophers who are making news and reshaping how we look at our sexual selves. I can assure you that these conversations will be well worth your time. And look for all of Dr. Dick's podcasts on iTunes. You'll find me in the podcast section under Health, subcategory Sexuality. Or just search for Dr. Dick's Sex Advice. Don't forget to subscribe and feel free to leave a comment when you do. Until next week, remember, sex is good. And good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.